Okay, now today, the lesson we have today, lest you be overwhelmed with how much we cover, remember, this is still just an overview. And so for those of you familiar with precept, what does an overview consist of, really? Okay, observation. Is it a time when you answer questions? No, it's a time when you do what? You ask questions. You start to think about what questions you might have that hopefully will be answered in the next, well, we have 8 weeks now, and then we have 14 weeks in the spring. And so we have a lot of time that we're going to dig into some of this a little bit more deeply. But the overview, the purpose of the overview is to kind of get the flow of the book. It's to understand how the book is laid out, how the structure of the book. And how many of you, after even doing what we've done last year and this last couple of weeks, how many of you feel a lot more familiar with the book of Revelation since the first time you can remember ever opening the book and reading it? It's amazing, isn't it? It's just that reading and rereading and drawing pictures and, you know, looking at the structure of the book that opens up a lot of insight. It's just the reading and the reading and the reading and the reading. You know, we love that, don't we? That's one of the great things about precept, I think, and doing the observation worksheets and all that, is that you read it over and over and over again. And when you read it again and again, things just start to pop out. And so as we go through today, remember, we're not, there's going to be questions. You know, what about the tree of life? What about this? What about that? We're not answering those questions today. We're just going to look and see how do things actually flow in the book of Revelation. So you'll want to have out your little chart you did. Now my book, I found out last night, my book is different because I got it a little bit earlier. I don't have the charts that you have. So the chart, the purpose of the chart is for you to see what is in the book. I don't know why we didn't have it, but so you want your observation worksheets and your little chart to help you see. So we're going to review really quickly what the seals were. So remember when John was taken up to heaven, remember he said, come up here, and he was taken into heaven, he saw the one on the throne, and what did he have in his hand? Okay, the scroll. And how is the scroll sealed? Ladies, if you got, just come in, if you have books back here to get, go ahead and get them. How many seals? Seven seals. He could see seven seals on that scroll. And so who was going to open the book? Okay, nobody seemed to be able to, but then there was the Lamb, and he was going to open the book, right? So as we go through the first, what chapter has the seals in it? Okay, six. How many seals? Six seals, right? So easy to remember that. Where it kind of kicks off there with the six seals. Okay, what was the first seal? He opened that first seal. Okay, the white horse. What was, in one sentence, what was significant about the white horse? Okay, conquered. He conquered. No arrows, just a bow. And so we know from the second seal, which was the which horse? The red horse. What did he do? Okay, so he took the peace from the earth. So we know that the conquering was not a conquering that came as a result of war, but it was what? More of a peaceful conquering, but let us remember that it was still a conquering. I think when we think about peace, we think it was great, but it was still a conquering. The people were being conquered. Okay, so the red horse took the peace from the earth. What about the black? Okay, great inflation, famine, right? The famine, and that would be a natural consequence of a war, wouldn't it? That when there's a great war, then there's going to be famine that follows behind it. Okay, so that was the black horse. What was the next one? Okay, what did the ashen horse bring with him? Okay, death, and who was following behind? Hades. Okay, so we get the impression that those who were dying were being taken to where? To Hades. He was waiting to drag them off, right? So how much of the earth was killed? One fourth. Think about the enormity of that. How many people are there on the earth? Anybody know? Yeah, I wonder how many. You think how, even if we had a fourth of this class, you think, you know, a fourth of the people on the earth, it's a lot of bearing, a lot of grieving. Okay, fifth seal. What happened to the fifth seal?
The martyrs.
Okay, the martyrs, where were they? Okay, they were under the altar. And what were they asking?
How long?
How long until what? Okay, how long until you're going to take vengeance? And what was the answer that he got? Okay, not yet. Not yet, not until the final amount of the martyrs were going to come in. So at this point in the fifth seal, what do we know? Okay, there's martyrs still coming in, right? Because the total amount has not come in yet, and vengeance has not taken place yet. Okay, what about the sixth seal? Okay, great earthquake, and what else?
Sky was split.
Okay, the sky was split like a scroll was rolled back. And what about the stars and the moon and the sun? Okay, all of those signs in the heavenlies, right? The stars fell out of the sky like the figs fall when the tree is shaken by unripe figs. So I'm assuming that unripe figs do not fall easily, like any unripe fruit. So shaken by a great wind, the sky split apart. And then what about the people? What does it say about the people? Okay, they hide themselves in the caves among the rocks, and they ask to be hidden from what? Okay, from the presence of him who sits on the throne and from the Lamb and the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand? All right, and then we saw after the sixth seal, we see that little interlude in chapter 7. And what do we see there?
Silence.
Okay, we saw the angels, and they're told not to do what? Okay, not to harm the earth until? Okay, until the 144,000 are sealed. And they are from where? They're sealed with the seal of God on their foreheads. And who are they? Okay, they're from the tribes of Israel. From 12 tribes of Israel, 12,000 from each one. And after those were sealed, then what do we see? No, we see the multitude in heaven. Okay, standing before the throne, and they are from where? Okay, so these are from every tribe and tongue and nation, Gentiles, and they're before the throne and before the Lamb, and they're clothed in white robes, and they are the ones who? What is he? Okay, they are the ones that come out of the great tribulation, and their robes are white because why? Okay, we said over and over, how is it that you can stand before the throne of God and before the Lamb? What is the only way? Okay, it's having your robes washed in the blood of the Lamb. When those sinners, those earth dwellers ask, who can stand before him? This is the answer. It's only through the blood of the Lamb. Okay, and then we have the seventh seal in chapter 8. What happens when the seventh seal is broken? Silence. Here's where the silence comes in. Silence for a half hour. However that's measured in heaven, there's silence for 1 half hour. And when the seventh seal is broken, what does he see? Okay, he sees the seven angels who stand before God with seven trumpets given to them. And then we have the angel that comes out to the altar. And what is he going to do? Okay, he has that censer, right? And incense is in there, and he adds it to what? Okay, the prayers of the saints. And then it's thrown down to the earth, and when it's thrown down to the earth, what is the effect? Okay. Well, it's all that thunder and lightning and earthquake, and then they begin to prepare themselves to sound. One of my ladies last night, her husband's a trumpet player, and she told him, the angels in heaven even have to prepare to sound the trumpet, so you shouldn't be discouraged, and you have to practice. Okay, so the angels prepare to sound the trumpet. Now, what's the first trumpet? Okay. Okay, here we go with the one-thirds, right? It's a third of the earth burned up, a third of the trees, all the green grass burned up. Second angel. Okay, the sea, right, the salt water is affected, and what happens when the sea is affected by this? Okay, sea turns into blood, and a third of the sea creatures and a third of the ships die and destroyed. Okay, what about the third trumpet? Okay, the fresh water. Now, what is the effect of the fresh water being affected into turning into bitter water? Okay, lots of dying. We don't have a fractional amount here, but many people are going to die from the waters being turned bitter. Okay, the fourth trumpet. Okay, how much of it?
One third.
So once again, a third. And then we have the angel or the eagle flying in mid-heaven. And what's the eagle's message?
Whoa.
Yeah, those ominous words. Whoa, whoa, whoa. To who? Okay, to the earth dwellers. Because of the remaining blast of the trumpets, the three angels which are about to sound. So we know from studying this that means that there's three woes, there's three trumpets. So those woes are attached to the trumpets.
Diana, last year you made a note to say it's repeated for emphasis to the people who regard earth as their own.
Right. Who are the earth dwellers?
The people who like it.
Yeah, they're the people that have made themselves at home here, aren't they?
Right. They think they rule.
Yeah. Because the world, we think about the world, it's the world system, isn't it? It's the world system under Satan that they have made themselves a home in. And we don't feel that, do we? This world is not our home. We're only passing through. And so we have that friction, that discomfort when things in this world don't line up with God's word and with the holiness of God. But they don't feel that. They are at home in this world. Those are the earth dwellers, those who dwell upon the earth. Okay, the fifth angel sounds, and this is the first woe. What's the first woe? Okay, it's those locusts that come from where? Okay, the bottomless pit. And we know that coming from the bottomless pit, that these are demonic beings. They are like locusts. Do they eat the earth, the green things on the earth?
No.
Right, they don't eat things on the green things. They go after the people. Which people do they go after? Okay, the earth dwellers, those who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And they are not permitted to kill, but only to what?
Torment.
Torment. For how long?
5 months.
5 months. They can't die, right? And then we have the big description of them. Okay, that is the fifth trumpet and the first woe. Now, what is the sixth trumpet and the second woe? Okay, it's the Euphrates River being unbound, and the armies of the horsemen were what?
200 million.
Okay, 200 million, and they came, and with their plagues that come out of their mouths, how many people are going to be killed? A third of mankind. So you've already had a fourth of mankind, and then we had many die. Thank you, Bev. And then we also have now a third of the remainder of mankind being killed. So all this is going on, and what about the rest of mankind, those who were not killed by the plagues? They don't repent. I mean, you should highlight this and put circles around it and everything. This is really important to show the condition of the hearts of the people that live on the earth. They don't repent, and they still worship the demons and the idols, and their life bears the fruit of that in ungodliness. And they do not repent. They do not repent. Very important. Okay, that was the sixth trumpet, the second woe. And then he saw the angel come out and the seven peals of thunder. And he says that, let's see, when the seven peals of thunder had spoken, then the angel on the sea lifted his hands and said that in the voice of the seventh angel, what is going to be true? Okay, the mystery of God is finished as he preached to his servant the prophet. So all that God has preached to his servant the prophets is all going to be done in the voice of the seventh angel. And then he eats the book, and we know that it's bitter in his stomach, and he has to give another message out that's going to be for many people and many kings and many tongues and many nations. And it's going to be a message of what? As it makes his stomach bitter. What kind of message is it? Judgment. Okay. In chapter 11, before the seventh angel sounds, what do we see in chapter 11? Okay, so measure the temple, And it says the temple is going to be tread underfoot for how long? Okay, for 3.5 years.
So let's get our little timeline. Now, what else happens then? Okay, the two witnesses. Now, the two witnesses are those who stand before the God of heaven, right?
And what do they have the power to do? Okay.
And they can hold plagues. They can stop the rain and send fire.
Right. They are the ones who can shut up the sky so that rain will not fall during the days of their prophecy. So how long was there not any rain then? Okay, there was 3.5 years of no rain. Interesting. I was thinking about this, and I came to mind in the book of James where he talks about Elijah, and he says that during the days of Elijah's prophesying, how long did it not rain on the earth? It was 3.5 years, which to me, you know, you're trying to think who these guys might be.
It says they have the power to shut up the sky, but it doesn't say that they did.
I think it means they did. I would guess they did, because we see all this going on.
Do you think they turn the water into blood, too?
I think that these guys are the ones that bring about all that goes on the first 3.5 years. I think it's God who does it. He is their agent, because they are standing before the Lord of heaven, and all these things they have the power to do are the things that we see happening in the first 3.5 years. So where do the prophets, when do they prophesy? It's for how many days they get? Or months, or
42.
Okay, so we talked about them being prophesying during this first half of the 7-year week here. And so they have the power to do all those things. And they're indestructible, aren't they? During the days of their prophesying, which is for 3.5 years, they are indestructible. Okay, and then when they finish their testimony, what happens to them? Okay, they're killed by the beast. The beast comes and kills them. Okay.
By the beast. And we know that's at the end of the 3.5 years. And we know the story we talk about so many times, the big party and all that, and what happens to them. They get taken up into heaven. And what happens when they're taken up into heaven and their enemies are watching them because they're all filing past looking at their bodies? What happens?
Okay, there's a great earthquake. A tenth of the city fell. What city was that? Jerusalem. It says in verse 8 that they're lying in the street of the great city, which is mystically called Sodom and Egypt, where also their Lord was crucified. And we know that is Jerusalem. Okay, so the great earthquake comes. That is the second woe is past. So the sixth trumpet is done now. The third woe is coming quickly. The seventh angel sounds. And what happens? Okay, it's, we could all sing the Hallelujah chorus now, right? Because the kingdom of this world has become the kingdom of our God and of his Christ. And how long is he going to reign?
Forever
and ever. Isn't that just a wonderful thing to think about? That all this is ushering in God's kingdom, and he will rule forever and ever. And the 24 elders fall on their faces and worship God, and they give us some information about what's going to happen over the next 3.5 years, really. What's going to happen during the days of the seventh trumpet and the third woe? Okay, the nations are enraged, and what? Okay, God's wrath has come, and the time has come for the dead to be judged, and saints to be rewarded, and he's going to destroy those who destroy the earth, right? So his kingdom has come. He's taken his power and begun to reign. All these things are going to happen over the time of the seventh trumpet. So it doesn't mean it happens all at once, but there's a time period of the seventh trumpet where these things are going to happen. So the temple of God in heaven is opened, and the Ark of the Covenant appears, and there's flashes of lightning and peals of thunder and earthquakes and hailstorms. Something big is going to happen. All right. So then we have the seventh trumpet. Now when the seventh trumpet is blown, what do we see in chapter 12? Okay, we see the first sign. What's the first sign? Okay, the woman. And what does she do?
She was with child, being in labor.
Okay, the woman has a son. And what's the second sign?
The red dragon.
Okay, the dragon. What is he wanting to do?
He was going to take the place.
Okay, he wants to devour. Isn't that just what he does? He devours. What is he doing? He's a roaring lion, crawling across the earth, seeking what? Who he can devour. That's his character, isn't it? So he wants to devour the child. So she gives birth to the son, and does he get to devour the child?
No.
He tries, but what happens to the child?
Okay.
Caught up into heaven, right? Caught up into the throne. Okay, so that happened at the crucifixion, correct? Okay, then looking ahead then, what is the woman going to do? Okay, she's going to flee into the wilderness where she has a place prepared for her by God to be nourished for how long? Okay, so the woman is here. She flees. 3.5 years, going to be nourished by God and protected. Okay, then what do we see in verse 7 and through 9? Okay, there's a war in heaven. Who loses the war? Okay, the dragon and his angels lose the war.
When does this take place? Is this prior to Eden?
Were they? No.
Were this war where Satan is?
No, because where does Satan have access to heaven now?
Yes.
Yes, he does. This takes place in the mid, right in here. It's going to come from here. So at the midpoint, there's going to be the war. Satan is going to be thrown down to the earth. He has no more access to heaven at that point. Up till then, he has access to heaven. We know that from Job. We know that because he's the accuser of the brethren. At that point, he has no access. And even in Daniel, we saw him before the throne with his blaspheming words, remember? Blaspheming God, arrogant, arrogant, arrogant. Okay, so he's thrown down.
I think it's confusing because it sounds like he's there permanently in the text to me. Like, that they were thrown down, but like you're saying, it just means he doesn't have access to heaven anymore.
Yes, because right now he's the ruler of this world, but he has access to heaven.
This
is future. But when he swept the stars of the heaven out, where is it? We're in 10, 10.
Verse 4.
That is, I think, before Eden, when he fell, when we have the fall of Satan. But this is looking at the fact that he is going to be cast out of heaven. And when he's cast out of heaven, we know that there is rejoicing in heaven because why? He's gone. They don't have to listen to him anymore. But woe to who? Okay, woe to those who live on the earth.
We kind of forget there are three heavens, and he controls the heaven, part of the heavens, and that are connected to earth. But he doesn't control the heaven where God is.
But he has access.
Absolutely.
Access, yes.
And when he's gone, it's never happened in history before.
No, no. He is gone, and there is rejoicing in heaven. Because we see him popping up, you know, with his blasphemous words in heaven and his challenges to God. But no, he is cast down, and because he's cast down, they are rejoicing. But what does it say in verse 12? Not just to the heavens rejoice, but woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows his time is short. So that woe, I think, is associated with the third woe. That third woe involves Satan being cast down to the earth. And that seventh trumpet is blown. The Satan cast down, the woe, third woe. Okay, so we know that he is then going to persecute the woman. He's thrown down to the earth. He persecutes the woman who gave birth to the child, but the wings of the eagle are given to the woman, and she flies away to the wilderness. And is safe from him. So the dragon is what? Okay, he is enraged with the woman and goes off to make war with the rest of her children. Now we know that from the time, really, at the time of this, has he been pursuing the woman all this time?
Yeah.
Yes, but it's nothing like what's going to come at the time of the end. It's been all through the ages, but it's going to be worse then. Okay, so then we see in chapter 13, we see the dragon, and where is he?
Coming out of the sea.
Okay, standing on the shore of the sea, on the sand of the seashore, and he's watching somebody come up. Who's he bringing up? Okay, the beast is coming up, and we see the description of the beast, and we have looked at this, and everybody follows the beast, right? Who is like the beast? They're all following him, and we recognize him because what comes out of his mouth? Arrogant words and blasphemies. And he has authority to act for how long?
42 months.
Okay, so the beast has authority for 42 months. So there he is. He is going to rule everyone over every tribe, people, tongue, and nation. And all who dwell on the earth are going to do what? All those earth dwellers?
Worship.
We're going to worship him unless their names are written in the book of life. Okay, and then we see another beast coming up, and who is he? Okay, the false prophet. And what does he do?
He causes the others to worship beasts.
Okay. He's kind of like he's the one that causes everyone to worship, and he's the one that the instigator that gives the image it is made, the ability to speak, and it's he that tells everybody they have to have a what?
Mark.
The mark to either buy or sell. So he runs the economic system as well, apparently, or at least regulates it. And so he is the false prophet. So we have the beast, we have the dragon, and we have the false prophet. And then in chapter 14, what do we see? Okay, we have our 144,000 that were sealed, and they are on Mount Zion, and we don't know if this is on the earth at the end or if it is in heaven. We don't really know at this point, but they are with who? They are with the Lamb, and we know that they are the ones who follow the Lamb, right? And he talks about all the things about these men. What are they? What's their character like? Yeah, they follow the Lamb wherever he goes. They're the first fruits purchased as fruit to God and to the Lamb. And they're blameless, yes. And then we have the angel flying in the mid-heaven, and what is he proclaiming? Okay, the eternal gospel, which is what? Yeah, we see it in verse 8, to fear God and give him glory because the hour of his judgment has come. So they are to do what? Worship him who made the heavens and the earth and the seas and the springs of water. He's the one who has authority over everything. So worship him. So that one last proclaiming of what the eternal gospel is. And then we have another angel and he's crying out what? Okay, so we have that reference to Babylon the Great, that she has fallen. So think of this being the time of the seventh trumpet, that that Babylon has fallen. And how is she described in verse 8 of chapter 14? Okay. She has made all the nations drink of the passions of her immorality. And then we have another angel that comes out, and he gives the sentence on those who retake the mark and worship the beast. And what is it?
Mark on his forehead.
Wine press.
He will drink the wine.
Okay, they are going to drink the wine of the wrath of God, which is mixed in full strength. There's no mercy now. It's full strength in the cup of his anger, and they'll be tormented forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Okay, and then we see the command to reap the earth in verses 14 and following. And when the earth is reaped, where are those grapes thrown? Okay, into the winepress of the wrath of God to be trodden by who in the end? We know. Who's going to tread the winepress of the wrath of God? Jesus will. And it's when he does, it's outside the city. And how high does the blood rise? Okay, so we get the idea of the fullness of the judgment here. There is going to be so much blood. The judgment was going to be complete, distance of 200 miles. Okay.
And then we start chapter 15. Now he says in chapter 15, then I saw another sign. So how does chapter 15 link back to chapter 12? Seventh trumpet was blown. We had one sign, two signs, and now we're picking it up again. Three signs, another sign. What is this third sign that he sees? Okay, seven angels with... Okay, the seven bowls, seven plagues, and they are significant because when those plagues are dumped, what does it say about them? Okay, they are the last. They are the last. In them, the wrath of God is finished. And so they come out of the seventh trumpet, right? So the seventh trumpet is going to blast here. Seventh trumpet. Okay, so that means all the seven bowls come where? And we don't know exactly how they fall, but we get the idea that they fall, they come quickly. Just one after the other, like gunshot, one after the other. Okay, so we see the victor singing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb, and they're worshiping God. They say, great and marvelous are your works, O Lord God the Almighty. Righteous and true are your ways, King of the nations. Who will not fear you, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you alone are holy, for all the nations will come and worship before you, for your righteous acts have been revealed. Why is this important that they're saying this now before the seven bowls of God's wrath are poured out upon the earth? What are they saying? Yeah, but everything he does is righteous, and they are agreeing with everything that he's going to do, that he is the righteous God. Everything he does is right and true, and that they're looking ahead to the day when all the worship nations are going to come and worship before him after the wrath of God has been poured out. So it's important for us to remember that God is righteous in everything that he does. Even if we think it sounds horrible, he is righteous in everything he does. Okay, so after that, the temple of the tabernacle in heaven is opened, and what does he see? Yeah, these seven very important angels with their seven plagues are coming out. And how are they dressed? Isn't heaven going to be a beautiful, you think of all the white, we all love laundry day when the white things, you know, and yeah. So here we have them clean and bright and girded with golden sashes. And one of the four living creatures comes out. One of the four living creatures gave to the seven angels seven bowls filled with God's wrath who lives forever. And when he gives them those bowls, what happens in the temple in heaven? Yeah, the glory of God fills the temple until, what does it say? Yeah. Yeah, no one is able to enter until the seven plagues are finished. I was wondering who might be entering the temple up there. I'm not sure, so it's something to think about. Okay, but no one is able to enter now until the seven plagues are finished.
Diana, in the Old Testament, when the temple was dedicated, and you know where I'm going,
mm-hmm.
and how the glory fell, Moses couldn't get in there,
right.
The priest couldn't get in there under Solomon,
mm-hmm.
because something big had happened.
Yeah, yeah.
What God's doing
here. Something in heaven. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wanting that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Before the plagues. Before the plagues. Yep. Okay. So the plagues are going to be poured out in chapter 16. So here's the command given to the seven angels. Go and pour out on the earth the seven bowls of the wrath of God. Okay. So the first bowl is going to be poured out. Where are my bowls? What is it? Okay, it's going to be sores. What kind of sores? Yeah, loathsome and malignant sores on who? Okay, it's on the people who had the mark of the beast and who worshipped his image. Now, the fact that it's specified, what does that tell you about the people on the earth at this time? Okay, not all of them have done that. There's apparently some that have not yet. receive the mark of the beast. But this is on those that have received the mark of the beast and worship his image. Okay, that's the first one. What's the second one? Okay, the sea became blood, and it's the blood like a dead man. Now, this compares to which trumpet? Okay, the second trumpet, and it said it was the blood, but didn't say it was the blood like the dead man. This is the blood. What is the blood like a dead man? It congeals. It's thick. It's gunky. It's the water's not flowy like water. It is a mass of yuck. Okay. So it's poured out on the sea, and it becomes like the sea, like the blood of the dead man, and every living thing then in the sea dies. It's not a third. It's everything. Everything is going to die that's in the sea. And then the third bowl is poured out. What's the third bowl? Okay, just like in the, which trumpet was that? Which trumpet affected the sea, the fresh water? The third trumpet. Okay, so the rivers, the springs, the fresh water become blood. And he hears the voice of the angels of the water saying what? Okay, righteous are you. You have given them blood to drink. Why do they deserve it? Okay, so they poured out the blood of the saints and the prophets, and now God has given them blood to drink. So you think about the martyrs under the altar. They were saying, how long until you're going to judge? So what do we see here? Is it coming? Yeah, and what did he tell them? It wouldn't be until all the martyrs were in. So we must kind of figure that at this point, the martyrs must already be in heaven because now they're getting their just desserts. They deserve it. And then I hear the altar saying, yes, O Lord God, the Almighty, true and righteous are your judgments. So God is righteous who judges, isn't he? He is completely righteous. Okay, and the fourth angel poured out his bowl upon what? Okay, the sun. And what do we see there? Okay, it's on the men are scorched with heat, and what do? So they're not repenting, are they? You know, they're being burned by the sun. Their sunscreen is not doing the job for them. They're being burned by the sun, and they're still blaspheming God. Interesting how that word blaspheming comes in, because we know Satan is the one who is filled with blasphemous words, and he's constantly blaspheming God. Now, those that follow him and worship him, what are they filled with? The blasphemous words that come out of their mouth, that come from the pit. As they blaspheme the name of God who has power over the plagues, they do not repent so as to give him glory. That compares to the fourth trumpet, doesn't it? And then we have the fifth angel pouring out his bowl on what? Okay, on the throne of the beast and his kingdom. And what are the people who are living there? What's their response? Okay. Once again, they're blaspheming God because of their pain and because of the sores. They still have those malignant, horrible sores on their bodies, and so they're blaspheming God. Now, because these bowls and trumpets compare, are they the same thing?
No.
No, we know they're different, but they're comparable to what happened in the with the trumpets. Okay, so the fifth one brings the darkness to the kingdom of the beast. The sixth trumpet, what happens? Okay, the Euphrates River dries up so that what? Okay, we're getting ready for the big war, the big showdown, right? Kind of reminds me when you're in labor. I've had so many babies, all these things in my mind. That when they bring in, start to get everything ready, you know, they get the little bassinet out, and you think, oh, we're getting close to the end now. Well, this is the big sign. They're getting close to the end, the big war, because the Euphrates River is dried up to prepare the way for the kings from the east. And what comes out of the mouth of the dragon and the false prophet and the beast? Okay, the demonic spirits, they go out to do what? Okay, they're going to do signs to gather who?
The kings.
All the kings of the earth for war. So what do we know about the character of Satan?
Blasphemous.
Okay, he's blasphemous. He is a liar. He is a deceiver. So as he goes out, you can imagine that those spirits that are going forth from him, when they go to those kings, they are deceiving and lying and to bring them all in and showing them signs. So they're going to come and they're going to gather together for what? Yeah, the great day of God the Almighty. And he says he's gathering them together in a place called
Armageddon.
So here we have them, the preparation, the groundwork being laid for Armageddon, which is coming, of course, during this time frame. Okay, then the seventh angel pours out his bowl, where? Upon the air. And a loud voice comes out of the temple from the throne saying, it is done. Okay, and then once again, there's what? Okay, lightning and thunder and a great earthquake. Now, how is this earthquake different than any other earthquake we've seen up to this point? Yeah, if you think there's been bad earthquakes before, this is nothing like that. This is worse than anything ever before.
It's interesting because back in Matthew, it talks about, you know, broad is a gate and it's the road that leads to destruction, but narrow is a gate that leads. So you think all those are the people that are coming with the kings of the east. If the earth is tilted off its axis just a little bit, it's just so now that we get just enough sun that we can live. That if it's tilted just a little bit off its axis, people are burned, could be burned up. So with all these earthquakes, you wonder if the Lord is tilting and people are scorched with fire that way. It's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't even imagine the effect on the earth of all these cataclysmic things. I mean, it's in bad shape at this point from all the destruction that has been thrown at it. Yeah, there's a lot. I know. I can't even imagine. I can't. Okay, so here's the... Yeah?
I'm confused a little bit. Did you say those... I'm asking you, aren't the bowls happening at the same time as the trumpets were?
No.
They were not?
No.
They were not?
No. No. The seventh trumpet brings forth all of this. No, but they're similar. They're similar, but it's a portion and a portion and a portion. But now everything is being destroyed during the bowls. Okay, so that when the earthquake happens, the earthquake that is greater than any earthquake that ever, ever, ever has come to the earth, what is the effect of it going to be? Yeah, we have the great city, whichever one that is, I will find out later. There's two great cities in this book, aren't there? It's split into three parts, and what happened to all the cities of the nations? They all fall. The cities all fall from this earthquake. And then what do we see in verse 19 as well? Okay, that mention of Babylon the Great. Remember before God, has he ever really forgotten her? No. To give her the cup of the wine of his fierce wrath. And every island falls, please, and the mountains aren't found. It is a huge earthquake. And what comes from the sky? Yeah, the 100-pound hailstones are going to fall on people. And the people that are still alive, what do? They blaspheme God because of the hail, because it's so bad. We think of we get golf ball-sized hail. I can't imagine 100-pound hailstones. Okay, and then chapter 17 and 18 then deal with what subject? Babylon. How is she described in verse 1? Okay, she is the great harlot who sits on many waters. And what are the many waters? We're going to see it later in the it's the nation. So she sits over, which gives you the idea that she does what? That she rules over many, many nations and people. And it defines her a little bit more, describes her. And she's the one whom the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality, and those who dwell on the earth were made drunk with the wine of her immorality. And then he's taken up and he gets a vision of her. And what do we see about her? How is she described? Okay. Okay, so she's the woman sitting on that beast, and the beast, is he someone that we recognize? We've seen him before, haven't we? So what is significant about the fact that she sits on the beast? She's in control. When you ride a horse, you are in control. You should be, right? She's in control of the beast at this point, and she has all those abominations and unclean things written on her, and her name is Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. And what about that woman in verse 6 is important? Okay, she is drunk with the blood of the saints and of the witnesses of Jesus. And he says, why are you wondering about her? Let me tell you the mystery. Now, we're not going to try to understand the mystery right now. We're going to go through it. It's like a puzzle, isn't it? It's like a big riddle, the mystery here. Okay, the beast which you saw was and is not and okay, is about to come out of the abyss and go to destruction. So you kind of see the whole thing about the beast here. And those who dwell on the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast that he was and he is and he will not and is not and will come. Right. Okay. Here's the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are what? Seven mountains on which the woman sits, and they are seven kings. And what does it say about the seven kings? Five have fallen, one is. So during the time of John, one was then, right? One is at that time. And one has not yet come. And when he comes, he will do what? A little while. Now the beast which was and is not is himself also an eighth and one of the seven. And he goes to destruction. The ten horns which you saw are ten kings. Remember the ten toes on the statue? Ten kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but they receive their authority when they do receive their kingdom as kings with the beast for how long?
One hour.
What's their purpose?
To give power and authority.
Okay, in the end, turn their power and authority over to the beast, and they're going to wage war against the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them because he is the what?
Lord of lords.
He is the Lord of, no matter how great they think they are and how awesome and terrible they are, he is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and those who are with him are called and chosen and faithful. So who's the victor in the end? Do we need to fear the beast? No, Jesus is the victor. And the ten horns which you saw and the beast will hate the harlot, back to her, and make her desolate and naked, and they're going to destroy her, aren't they? Because God has put it into the ten horns' hearts to do what? To execute his purpose by having a common purpose and by giving their kingdom to the beast until the words of God will be fulfilled. And the woman who you saw is the great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. So God is sovereign. Remember that. You know, God is sovereign. That he is given them the purposes of their heart to do his will. They are going to execute his will. Okay, then chapter 8 deals with what? Okay, the actual fall of Babylon. She is the economic capital of the earth, the great city of the beast kingdom, and she is going to fall. And it says that she, in verse 2, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a what? Okay. So how did that happen? Who's in charge there? Okay, this is his city, right? She is a prison of every unclean thing, and the nations have all partaken of her immorality, and everybody's become rich from her. And the voice from heaven calls out, saying, what in verse 4?
Come out of her.
Okay, come out of her, who?
My people.
So once again, are there going to be some left at this point that have not taken the mark of the beast? There's got to be. So that you will not participate in her sins and receive of her plagues. For, what does it say in verse 5?
God has remembered her iniquity.
Her sins have piled up how high?
The highest heaven.
Think back to Babel. What was their goal? What were they building? Yeah. They were building that tower to reach up to heaven. And with that tower, just like that visual tower, their sins have reached up as high as heaven, and God is going to pay her back and give back to her double according to her deeds in the cup which she has mixed, twice as much for her. So to the degree she has glorified herself and lived sensuously, to the same degree give her torment and mourning. For what does she say? Is there an arrogance there?
Yes.
What was the sin of Satan in the first place?
Pride.
No one can ever bring us down. No one can bring us down. Remember when we studied the book of Obadiah and we saw Edom and Edom with their fortress on the mountaintop? What did they say? Nobody. Nobody can ever bring us down. Nobody can ever bring us down. And God said, I will bring you down. And this is the same way. They have that same arrogance, same one behind them as Edom. And then we have the reaction of the kings of the earth, and how are they going to respond when they see all of this going on? Yeah, first of all, they're going to keep their distance, aren't they? They're going to stand back, but they're going to weep and cry over that. And look at the cargo that she has sold. What kind are they sell that she buys? What is the worst one on there? Yeah, the slaves and the human lives. You think of all the human trafficking now. Who is behind that, ladies? It is Satan behind all of that. We see it now. We'll see it more so then. Okay, so in 1 hour, it's going to be a sudden destruction on her, isn't it? It says over several times here that how is it going to happen?
1 hour.
1 hour. It's going to be a quick thing. And then when she's destroyed, what's going to be like in Babylon in verse 22 and following? Yeah, it's a total destruction. There's not going to be any normal life left, is there? Just like when we saw the destruction of Jerusalem back in, I think Jeremiah talked about this, no longer the sound of the bridegroom, no longer the sound of the person with the grinding the grain, no more of this, no more of that. It's going to be life as you know it, over. And so the complete destruction will be falling on Babylon because the nations were deceived by your sorcery. And what is going to come to be found in Babylon? Okay, the blood of the prophets, the blood of the saints, and the blood of all who have been slain upon the earth. Is Babylon not here now? The spirit of Babylon? Yeah, it's here. And you think down through the ages, you know, when the church persecuted, the nation of Israel persecuted, everyone that's been slain on the face of this earth, it really goes back to Babylon. And the blood of all those people is going to be found in Babylon. Okay, let's go through real quick chapter 19. This is a quick overview. What happens in chapter 19? Hallelujah. Yes. What is the marriage supper of the Lamb? Rejoice, give him glory, for the marriage supper of the Lamb has come, and his bride has made herself ready. And we see those garments that she wears. And what does he say in verse 19? Who is blessed? All the blessed things in Revelation. Who is blessed in verse 9?
Those invited.
Okay, those who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb. Who are the ones that are invited to come?
No, the church is the bride.
The church is the bride.
So who are those?
Who are the guests? We'll find out later, I'm sure. It's not the church, because the church is the bride. Okay, then he falls down to worship. And then who do we see coming out of heaven in verse 11?
White horse.
Okay, and who's on that horse? Here he comes, the hero of the Bible, isn't he? He's the hero. And he is coming with his troops behind him. And who are they? Okay, yeah, the saints and the armies of heaven in fine linen, white and clean, following him. And he is going to come. What's his purpose in verse 15? Okay, he is going to strike down the nations with the sharp sword that comes from his mouth. And after he strikes them down, he's going to do what? Rule with a rod of iron. And it is he that treads the winepress of the fierce wrath of God the Almighty. And after the winepress is tread, what's the message that goes out from the angel to the birds in the air? Okay, come assemble for the great supper of God, that you may eat the flesh of all those people. They're all going to be eaten up by the birds. And we see in verse 19, who's coming to make war against the one who sits on the horse and against his army? Okay, the beast and the false prophets. When you think about the book, the movie Lord of the Rings, y'all seen that? In the end, you know, when there's the good guys on one side and there's those horrible beasts on the other side, it's going to be, and there they are, ready to make war against the armies. And what happens to the beast and the false prophet? Okay, they're going to be seized in his presence, and they're going to be thrown where?
Into the lake of fire.
Okay, into the lake of fire. And who's going to be thrown down there with him? Okay, those who worshipped his image. The beast and those who worshipped his image, received the mark. So these two, the beast and the false prophet, are going to be thrown down in the lake of fire, which burns with what?
Brimstone.
Fire and brimstone. And what happens to the rest of the people that come against the one on the white horse and his armies? Okay, they're going to be killed, and the birds are going to come, and they're going to eat their flesh. Such an exciting story. Okay, then what happens in chapter 20? Okay, Satan is now going to be bound. Is he thrown to the lake of fire?
No.
His eternal judgment is not now, is it? He's going to be put into the abyss, and it's going to be shut and sealed over him so that he will not do what? Okay, his main job, deceiving, is going to be put to a halt for how long? 1,000 years. Is after this, what's going to happen? Okay, he'll be released for a short time. And then we see the thrones, and we see judgment, and we see the tribulation martyrs coming to life and reigning with Christ for how long?
1,000 years.
So we know those who come on the white horse will be reigning with Christ, these tribulation martyrs. The rest of the dead, the Hades holes, are not going to be raised until when? Or come to life until?
1,000 years.
Okay. Now, when 1,000 years are complete, what's going to happen in verse 7? Okay. Satan released to deceive who? Okay, the nations in the four corners of the earth, because we have 1,000 years to repopulate and get everything full again, and now he's going to come out and he's going to deceive. And is he going to be successful? Yeah, because the number of those deceived is going to be like what? The sand of the seashore. Think about that. And so they come up and they come around who? Who are they looking? Who are they rebelling against here? Okay, against the one who sits on the throne, right, in Jerusalem. So they're surrounding the city. Think about Psalm 2. They want to throw off his shackles. You know, they don't like the rule they have. Even though it's perfectly righteous and true, they don't like it. And so they want to throw him off. And so they come around, and the devil who had deceived them was... Oh, what? Forgot. Go back. The fire comes down from heaven and does what?
Devours
them. So there's no war here, is there? It says the fire from heaven comes and devours them. Then what happens to Satan then? Yes, he gets to join his two buddies in the lake of fire where they are tormented how long?
Forever.
Forever. And then there's the great white throne judgment, and the dead are resurrected, and those who have not been written in the book of life are thrown where? Into the lake of fire. And then we see 21 and 22, we see the description of the new heavens and the new earth, which we won't really get into right now. So if anyone's name is not written in the book of life, what is the destination of those people? It's the lake of fire, which burns forever and ever and ever. So think about that. You know, we have to have a real view of things as we look at people, and we need to be those that go out. What's our call in Matthew? What are we told to do? Yeah, to be his witnesses and bring people to Christ, see them become obedient to the gospel. Otherwise, their destination is the lake of fire.
Sam.
Yes.
So before all the people that aren't written in the book of life, when they're all dying throughout everything, they're all in Hades then?
Hell, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
but it's not really it's not their final...
But it's not fire and brimstone.
I think it's, I don't know if it's brimstone, but I'm pretty sure it's fire.
Okay.
Yeah. Not sure about the brimstone. We'll study that as we get on, I'm sure. So how do we live in the light of this book? We take 1 second here to focus on this. How do we live? We're supposed to, if we live in the light of the book of Revelation, we are blessed. What is it to live in the light of the book of Revelation? okay, we know who wins and we know the outcome. So how serious do we take all of this, ladies?
And we see the justice of God. And heard recently a message on visions. God isn't fair. Look at each other. We know God isn't fair. He made each of us, but he's just.
He is
and
just.
That's what we're talking about.
Right. The justice of God. Is justice for us? Do we seek vengeance? No, we don't seek vengeance, do we? It belongs to him. It belongs to him. So we live our lives focused on the Great Commission. That's our, you know, he gave Adam and Eve the job to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. What's the church's job? To be fruitful and multiply and fill what? Fill the heavens. That's our job. That's how we live in the light of the book of Revelation. So we're going to take a stop or break now and go to your small groups and discuss whatever questions you have there.